The Evolve Network is now live at evolvenetwork.tv. Subscribe for meal plans, recipes, cooking shows, and our very own The Magic Pill and The Magic Plant, as well as access to my favourite documentaries. The Evolve Network is also home to our full library of podcasts, with new release podcasts airing first and in full on the channel. You can also watch selected vodcasts in a video format. Meanwhile, enjoy this highlight of our podcast and head over to evolvenetwork.tv for the full Evolve podcast experience. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, peteevans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. Martin, thank you so much for joining us once again. This is our third or fourth rodeo, I think.
Yeah, when was the last time we spoke?
It was probably about, I would say, 2 or 3 years ago. And yeah. How are you?
I'm doing well. Continuing to have some ongoing health issues, so that kind of takes me up and down a bit. Doing quite well in the sense that past couple of weeks I've been in music mode. I'm working on a new album right now, and I'm really enjoying the process. So just been filling my free time with making music, which I could do like every day if I had the time to do it, because it's just so much fun.
What instruments do you play?
A little bit of everything. Like right here. So I've got my keyboard right here in front of me. Got some didgeridoos over there, got some flutes down there. I've got my wave drum here. I've got a djembe and a dumbek back here, and then I've got my 6-string guitar, my 12-string guitar, and then got my mandolin is over there somewhere. I've got a whole variety of different instruments, and like to mix it up a lot.
Are you self-taught, or did you go down the traditional route of having lessons? Take me through the journey of your music discovery.
Oh, sure. Well, when I was maybe seven or eight or something like that, I think I took piano lessons for like 5 months, and then that piano teacher like moved out of town and then started lessons with a new teacher, and neither I nor my sister liked the new teacher. And so I ended up quitting that. So that was the extent of my piano lessons. And then, you know, as I was a kid, my dad had bought me like this little Casio keyboard, like this little tiny thing that had these little, you know, tiny little keys. And then I had like a little bit bigger Casio keyboard at one point when I was a kid. So I'd always had like a little keyboard around. And, you know, I tell people, look, I can play the keyboards, I can play the synth, but I can't play piano. I'm not someone who could just sit down and do, you know, do that on the piano and get both your hands going and all of that. So I'm pretty basic when it comes to keyboard skills. And then it was around when I was 15, I started getting really inspired around music. It was during the summer, I was in Santa Cruz, and I remember I was listening to the radio, And it just kind of hit me like an epiphany at that point. It's like, you know what? I think I could make music, because I was really good at kind of like analyzing the music and kind of breaking down, okay, so this is what the keyboards are doing. This is what the guitar is doing. Here are the drums. Here's the bass. Here's the melodies. Here are the harmonies. So I was kind of dissecting music through listening to it. And was a huge, huge fan of The Cure at the time. And kind of I used The Cure as like my personal guitar lessons. So I ended up getting a guitar shortly after that epiphany. And basically I took some guitar lessons for like a year, but never really did the lessons. So like my instructor would say, okay, go home and practice these chords. And I'd go home and I'd play those chords. And I'm like, I don't like those chords. It's not working. So I would just come up with my own chord progression. And then mostly kind of learned just by jamming with older students at my high school. And then kind of late in high school, I played keyboards in a reggae band, and we never performed anywhere. And I played guitar in like an alternative rock band, and we performed like once, I think. And then also I'd added in like some bongos and conga drums by that point. And then later started collecting flutes, which really kind of harkens back to my childhood, that my dad did a postdoctorate in Santiago, Chile before I was born. And he got really hooked on like South American folk music. So like lots of stringed instruments, like little guitars and stuff, and lots of flutes and, you know, percussion and rattles and stuff. So I kind of grew up listening to that music. So I was always fond of like ethnic flutes, you know, not like a symphonic flute, but, you know, wood flutes, bamboo flutes, things like that. So I started picking up some of those. Then in graduate school, right when I started graduate school at UC Santa Barbara in the religion department, I saw a flyer on the wall that said, it's this band called Dreamtime Continuum with, other graduate students in religious studies. So I went to their show, and the leader of the band, his name is Mark. He also goes by his ashram name, which is Sudama. And he was playing the didgeridoo. And I had never seen anyone actually play a didgeridoo at that point. So that was like my first like live exposure to the didgeridoo. And I just went up after the show and I was like, hey, I'm a new graduate student at Santa Barbara, and you got to teach me how to play that thing. So I was trying to play the dig and was always lightheaded, like really struggling with the circular breathing, kind of over breathing and over trying. And then one night I had this dream that I was playing the didgeridoo, and I could feel my lips and my lungs and my diaphragm, and I was doing the circular breathing in the dream. And then I didn't remember the dream until like 3 days later. I was walking through my apartment and I saw my didge kind of stashed in the corner. And I was like, wait, I had this dream. And I picked it up. And ever since then, I'd been able to do the circular breathing. So that's when I became a didgeridoo player, and then collected all different kinds of didgeridoos. I mean, I've got them like all over my place here, but I don't play them very much anymore. So I'm kind of like out of the loop on the circular breathing and getting the right embouchure with my mouth. And then I also ended up getting a mandolin some years later, and then just other like little knickknacks, odds and ends, lots of rattles and little you know, tiny flutes and stuff like this. And so yeah, I'm basically self-taught on all of it. I can't read music. Sometimes I have other musicians like try and talk like music theory to me, and it's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know anything technically about music. I just love music and I play instruments and I enjoy it, but I can't say anything technical about music. Like, oh, that's a minor diminished seventh or something. Like, ah, you got me. I don't know.
That's so cool. Thank you for sharing. The Cure is pretty much what was my first band that I fell in love with as well when I was maybe 14 or 15 as well. It really spoke to me. Just that,
yeah.
I mean, Robert Smith and the whole band was just such an influence on my music taste from then. And I still listen to them every week to this day. And I'm 50 now. So it's that 35 years of timeless music. And Yeah, they were such a unique band, and their whole story is so unique. And where I want to go with this, with music, is because we, as you know, this podcast is about long-term regenerative health. And I've had a few musicians come on here and tell their story. And I want to ask you what music means as far as health to you, and how you've seen it used to take people on a journey of discovery, whether it be in ceremony, when you've sat with them. Do you sit in ceremony yourself with music, and have you done it in the past with your clients? Do you use music, or do you use silence?
Oh, always, always, always music. You know, just a few weeks ago, I was invited to speak at this church event that was called Entheogenesis. And I was invited to speak on the topic of music and psychedelic entheogenic experience. And one of the things I started off with was, you know, there's this really famous directive from Terence McKenna where he says, okay, you got to eat 5 grams of mushrooms alone in the dark and in silence. And I started off by saying, can anyone here think of any indigenous culture in the world that uses psychedelics for ceremony or healing or self-discovery and also says, do it in silence? And the answer is there's not a single one, because in every culture, music is an integral part of the experience. And the whole idea of like going on a psychedelic journey in silence is really anathema to what the psychedelic experience is all about, because music is this primary energetic input that not only can propel the journey, but it can steer it and it can drive it. And that the music takes you into different energetic environments where you're getting this different input, that it might be connecting with different thoughts, with different memories, with different emotions. It can impact your body physically. You're feeling the vibrations. And it's just, it's a kind of a crazy idea to do it alone in silence, because usually it's done in community and it's done with music. And so for me, music is just a fundamental part of the psychedelic experience. And as a musician, I love listening to music in general on psychedelics. I love listening to my own music. There have been times where I've been so altered that I know that I'm listening to my own music because that's what it says on my phone. And I'm listening to it. It's like, I have no idea what the song is. I have no idea what's coming next. And as the person who created the music, that is such a gift to have that kind of experience of not even knowing what your own music is and then being able to be surprised by every note, you know? So that's my general take on music, is that yes, it's absolutely fundamental. And back when I was facilitating with people with 5-MeO-DMT, I always used a playlist of my own music in those sessions. And actually, just going back to The Cure, one of the things that I really took from listening to The Cure was that even though you can listen to any Cure song and you can hear Robert Smith in there, like you can tell, okay, this guy made this song. That's very clear. But so many of their songs are so radically different from each other. And there's so many different arrangements and instrumentation and different textures and styles. And, you know, he's incorporating various world music elements and, so the songs that are playful and goofy and joyous, and songs that are like dark and difficult and emotional. And that's one of the things that really spoke to me from The Cure, was this idea that you don't, as a musician, there's no need to make every song sound the same. And you don't want every album to sound the same. And that within the album, you want a lot of variety. And so I've always kind of taken that, as a musician, and wanted to recreate sort of that motivation of always presenting something different and going into different places. And I think that that's really, really valuable in a psychedelic journey. If you're using music that goes through all these different textures, there's soft stuff, there's loud, there's...
I really hope you enjoyed the first half of this podcast. If you'd like to listen to the rest, please visit evolvenetwork.tv. That's evolvenetwork.tv. We'll see you there.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.